This episode of the Debatables podcast is brought to you by GlassesUSA.com. On a mission to change the way consumers purchase glasses, GlassesUSA.com was created on one simple belief: eyewear shouldn't break the bank. The smart way to buy glasses, GlassesUSA.com allows consumers to purchase eyewear from the convenience of their homes, offering a wide variety of high-quality frames and lenses at an affordable price with absolutely no risk. They offer quality prescription glasses online at affordable prices that save the customer up to 70% off retail prices. Yes, you, the customer, 70% off retail prices. A complete pair of glasses, frames, and lenses included, start at just $48. Using the promo code Almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, at checkout, you will receive a special promotion from GlassesUSA.com for listening. Free prescription lenses are included with every frame. So head to GlassesUSA.com. There you have a wide variety of selection, over 2,500 styles, from in-house brands like Muse and Amelia E to designer brands like Ray-Ban and Oakley. Any type of glasses you are looking for or need, GlassesUSA.com is there. Remember to use the promo code Almighty at checkout, and you'll receive an exclusive offer only good enough for our listeners.
Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it.
Jimmy starts to drive, step back in the air.
Oh, heavy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, big time.
Hashtag free Bobby Portis.
Welcome into the Debatables podcast, brought to you by Almighty Baller Podcast Network. My name is Jordan Malley, and I'm without Austin Hutchinson today, but the Debatables podcast is brought to you by Steiner Sports Memorabilia and GlassesUSA.com. Today's guest, Joe Borelli from the Superflight podcast, has decided to join me as, like we said, a little bit of a crossover episode. He talks about all the NBA. He's a Sixers fan. So we're going to talk about the first thing that I really wanted to talk about here on this podcast was why Jahlil Okafor is not wearing a Bulls uniform right now, because I 110% thought that was going to happen. Without a doubt in my mind, that is the atypical Bulls player. If you talk about Eddie Curry 2.0, it's Jahlil Okafor.
So that begs the question right off the bat. Did you want that trade to happen?
No, but I look at what they traded for McDermott, and I looked what they traded for Gibson and McDermott and a second round pick. And I said, I asked myself this question, I probably shouldn't have, is would Jahlil Okafor been a better chance to take than maybe Cameron Payne and some of these other guys? That's the question I really have to beg, and I guess you can answer this question better than anybody else.
All right, so Cameron Payne is a really damn good dancer. But other than that, I think Okafor might have been the better bet for you guys. Honestly, the thing about Okafor is, like, he can definitely get you buckets. He can score on the post. He's definitely a throwback, an old school down in the post, back to the basket kind of scorer. He doesn't give you a whole lot else. But, honestly, for the Bulls, maybe it does make more sense to take Cameron Payne, because they needed a point guard. They needed somebody who can actually shoot a three ball a little bit and distribute. I mean, I don't think he's shown anything in his game yet that would make that. I thought Doug McDermott was a way better player. And I don't know.
From a national perspective, from outside of Chicago, where he did get a lot of grief in Chicago, and some of it rightfully deserved, especially for his defense. His defense atrocious. And if he even figures out to be halfway of an average defender, he's going to be really good in this league. I said it on the podcast a couple days ago that he's going to go to Oklahoma City now and be a guy that can put up 20, 25, 30 points in a game, especially if he's lights on from three-pointer. And I feel like he's going to get a lot more opportunity with Russell Westbrook.
You're talking about Dougie McBuckets now, right? Just clarifying. Yeah, no.
Yes, that was Doug McDermott.
Yeah.
Jahlil Okafor, to me, I don't know.
What do you say?
To the basket?
Yeah. I mean, it's not the thing about Okafor is, listen, I'm sure he's a nice kid. I'm sure his work ethic is great. And the whole time he's been in Philadelphia, he's been in a really bad position for himself and for the team. It's not a good match. They don't play the same style of basketball that he plays. Actually, nobody plays the same style of basketball that he plays anymore. It's just not a good fit. And despite all of that, Okafor has not complained. He's not acted out. He's been a trooper, even when he was almost traded to the Blazers last week before, and they sat him. I've talked about this a few times now. They kept him home for a road game. Excuse me, this beer, I tell you. And when you hit your 40s and you keep drinking, you just, you know, you get burps. But he's been really a consummate pro for the most part, for like what you would expect for a kid that's, what, 22 years old, I think? It's incredible. He's handled himself with absolute professionalism. In that respect, Jahlil Okafor gets a whole lot of credit. He's been really good. As far as his game, I think he needs a different system. I think he needs a change of scenery. I think he, you know, it's tough. I think he does have some potential to improve defensively. I don't think he's going to be as bad as he is right now on defense. And you can already see it. His defense, as little as he's played this season with his inconsistent minutes, he tries some nights, and he puts in effort some nights. And when he does, he's not bad. He can block some shots amazingly without ever leaving the ground. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. He has hands like a waffle, and they're just giant, like a catch mitt. He could just stop anything. But I think he caught a comet once while I was watching a game. I wasn't sure. But go ahead.
So why did the 76ers decide to move on from Nerlens Noel and then ended up keeping Okafor? Like, even if the 76ers weren't going to get all that much for Okafor, if they're pretty much done and set on, you know, not really having this guy become a contributor on the 76ers team moving forward, why trade another asset that I thought they were going to hold on to for a while? And it seems like I like him going to Dallas. I think it's wonderful for Dallas. But what was the sudden need to push him out and say, all right, let's get a deal on this?
I can sum this up really quickly. The ineptitude of Brian Colangelo was the need to push him out. Listen, Brian Colangelo fumbled this situation so badly from the start when he refused to trade either one of the guys this past summer when he could have, last offseason, when Boston was willing to throw a first round pick at the Sixers to take Nerlens Noel. Listen, I'm glad that they didn't trade Noel to Boston, because that would have killed me inside even more than like it does now. And honestly, I think I'm really happy for Nerlens Noel, the player. I love watching him. I think his game is amazing. He's like one of the best defensive players in the league, and he's only 22 years old, and he's going to get better. He landed in a perfect situation for him. He's going to excel under Carlisle. He's going to be a great center. Someone, I think it was Ben Dietrich on Twitter, mentioned that Nerlens Noel is this year's James Harden, like the underrated player that somebody stole for a song, and like, he's going to blossom. He's going to be amazing. He wouldn't have been able to do that in Philadelphia, I think, especially, and knock on wood, Joel Embiid stays or gets healthy and stays that way. But the reason he moved him now is just because it was basically egg on his face. He waited too long to do anything. And then he was demanding way too much for Jahlil Okafor. So he values Okafor as a third overall pick, but Okafor is not worth that. And he just refused. His own ego got in his way. And this is what I can't stand about him, because we're going to talk in a little bit about drafting and how he's done there and what moves he's made so far in the offseason. But when it came to Jahlil Okafor, it was all about his ego. When it came to the Nerlens Noel trade, it's about his damn ego. When the first time I heard Brian Colangelo talk, when he came to Philadelphia, he went on Derek Bodner's podcast, The Sixers Beat, and he blamed his lack of success in Toronto on Chris Bosh. And the second he said that, I'm like, this guy is a douche. He's an egomaniac. He's just like his father, and he's going to ruin everything that Sam Hinkie set up. I'm sorry. Please take the mic, because I will just continue talking, something like that. I will just keep talking. Go ahead.
It seems like we have the same type of frustration with both of our front offices, and this is kind of why we brought this podcast together, is to talk about specific front offices in the NBA that just don't have a clue. And the Chicago Bulls, for now, and for lack of better term, the last couple of years have really sat in this window of not making the playoffs, not really getting any younger or more athletic like they said that they were going to. And this has been a repeat topic that we've talked about on the podcast. And it's something that is now being exposed to a bunch of contradictions and a bunch of flat out lies to the fans. They said in the summer that Dwayne Wade was part of their whole offseason plan, that it was a guy that they were going to go after. After spewing off something in May saying that they wanted to get younger, more athletic, and this has been the story and the song in Chicago. But then they come out and say, after they make this deal for Cameron Payne, that Dwayne Wade just kind of landed in their lap, and this that he they were never really thinking that he was going to be a part of this team in 2016-17. And so then it sits there, and you listen to both of those contradictions that John Paxson openly makes to the media and talking about, why didn't you trade for the draft picks? Why didn't you unload Butler when you could have had, you know, a protected first round pick? And that's something that's still even up for debate. I listened on Zach Lowe's podcast. Him and Brian Windhorst were talking about this deal and how whether or not the picks were protected or not. And people were saying that Boston's front office was holding that pick protected in top three. And if they were doing that, then I'm glad that they didn't unload Jimmy Butler. But
right.
If it wasn't protected, I just don't understand the deal. So it brings me back to my point, is the lies and the inconsistencies and the Bulls hanging now in a playoff spot with less chance of getting a good draft pick. They're not going to hit on the Kings pick now that Cousins is gone. It's just been a whole mess in the last few years, and it accumulated. It could even accumulate still when Tom Thibodeau was here.
Yeah, and I think it shows you that, like, it's a front office that cares more about consistently getting into the playoffs and middling and selling tickets than it does about building a real championship culture there, which is sad. Listen, as a Sixers fan, I've dealt with this for the last 20 years, ever since Iverson, and even before then, the ownership group, I mean, just wanted, it wasn't even an ownership group then, it was an owner. My God, he owned the Flyers. I can't remember his name right now. He just passed away, but he just, like, the Sixers was his afterthought. The Flyers were his baby. The Sixers were his afterthought. And all he wanted to do was put butts in the seat and get to the playoffs, you know, consistently. And they consistently got to the eighth seed and bowed out in the first round, if they got there at all. And it just, you know, after a while, the fans left. Like, basketball in Philadelphia was almost non-existent. People just didn't care because the product was not there, because they had nothing to root for. After Allen Iverson was gone, there was nothing exciting about basketball in Philadelphia. Like, there was, you know, there's so many kids playing on the streets around Philly, and, like, there's so many NBA players that are from Philadelphia in the league, like Kyle Lowry, right? But you couldn't get people to give a crap about that team when Ed Snyder owned it. Ed Snyder, there you go. And then they sold the group, they sold the franchise, and they sold it to this ownership group. And the new ownership group came in, and they made some wholesale changes, and they looked like they were going to go in the right direction. And part of that was tanking and cleaning house and cleaning out. And everyone was on, I mean, everyone that really actually cared about the team was on board. Sam Hinkie is our hero. And that's kind of like what, even though it sucked for a few years, like, it was actually kind of fun to root for your team to lose to get those draft picks. It overall sucked watching your team lose so much, but you knew there was a design. You knew there was a plan in place. You knew there was a process, right? And I think that's what has gotten Philadelphia fans through this time, where Bulls fans just don't have that right now. They're making every crazy move just to keep people coming, like signing Dwayne Wade, like signing Rajon Rondo. Just keep people coming to the stands and buying tickets and getting you into that playoff spot. But it doesn't you ultimately no good, because your draft pick is going to suck.
Yeah, and that's been the whole problem with the Bulls, and it's been a concern that's been voiced by whether it's writers or fans or analysts on TV. People outside the national perspective are seeing the Bulls as a team that, okay, they go out and they compete and they're going to get in the playoffs, and they've got a few okay pieces. And unfortunately for Bulls fans, they're not the most destructive team in the NBA right now. I mean, they're not the complete dumpster fire like maybe you talk about the Knicks being, maybe you talk about the Kings being. And that's tough because then the spotlight really isn't nationally on the Bulls anymore. It's you know, okay, we have a top four franchise that's in worth to the NBA. Going to make the playoffs. Doesn't matter what their seed is. They're still going to make the playoffs and they're still going to be on national TV. It makes me question a lot of these franchises too. And it makes me question like the Lakers franchise and the Knicks and the Bulls, three franchises that are your top wealthiest, you know, worth the most to the league. And yet none of them have made the playoffs or really been all that good in the last few years. And so I'm looking at the Bulls team being, you know, not getting out of this mess. I mean, the Knicks have Kristaps Porzingis and the Lakers have a boatload of young talent too. And I mean, they've got Brandon Ingram. They're set up for future success. Where the Bulls, what do they have? Yeah. What young guy can they build around? And that's leads us to our first point is draft picks. In the last, since the John Paxson, Gar Foreman era took over, the draft picks have been horrid. Outside Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, which was handed to them, it's been bad. It's been really bad. And I'm sad to flip it over to you because the guy that brought in a lot of your draft picks is now no longer with the team.
He died for our sins, Hinky. I just want you to know this in case you haven't heard this before. Yeah. Now, you know, the funny thing is, like, I can't really complain about the new regime, the new, like, the Colangelo regime, because he's actually made some decent draft picks so far. He's only been here for one draft, and he picked TLC, which is Timotei Luwalo-Cabarrot, and he got, hold on, who else?
I'm glad you know how to say that name, because I have no idea how to say that.
Rashawn Holmes, I think did he pick Rashawn Holmes, or is this Rashawn Holmes' second? This is Rashawn Holmes' second year, sorry. I think I was a hinky pick. Which, by the way, they blasted Hinky for his draft picks. Is one of the reasons they drove him out of the you know, the franchise. And so far, his picks seem to be pretty damn good. Dario Saric, Joel Embiid.
Wait, go back to that. Why was he drove out because of his draft picks? Just because Joel Embiid was injured?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, people knew what Joel Embiid was going to be, right?
Right, but the thing is, he didn't have anything to show for it the first few years. So the first year, he selected Nerlens Noel and Michael Carter-Williams, right? Nerlens Noel was out his entire first year. Michael Carter-Williams washed out in a year, and we traded him the beginning of the second, right? Or was it even the first? I don't know. But whatever, they got really high value for him.
He won the Rookie of the Year with the Sixers, and
right.
Then they shipped
the
him
next
off
year.
Shortly after that.
Right, because he was a good evaluator of talent and realized that, like, Michael Carter-Williams, and you should know this, is not that good.
That's being nice. That's being modest to talk about Michael Carter-Williams.
Listen, when he was on the team the first year, I was like, yeah, this kid's going to be good. And like, and everybody talked about his counting stats and he was on a really bad team. I'm like, no, he's got something. And the second year it came around, within like the first 10 games, I was like, I am totally out on this kid. He's shown no improvement whatsoever. And so Hinkie traded him, and what did we get? We got the Lakers, the first round pick, top three protected overall. And if they get out of the top three this year, the Sixers get it. If they land at number four, the Sixers get their pick. That's what we got for Michael Carter-Williams. I have no complaints about Sam Hinkie at all whatsoever. Ever in my life, I will have his name cemented on my headstone when I die. But as far as Brian Colangelo, my problem isn't with his draft picks. I think he's drafted fine so far. He picked the obvious choice of Ben Simmons, number one overall. He picked up Timotei Luwalo-Cabarrot, which is a great pick. I think that kid's got a really good career ahead of him. He's going to be a 3-and-D guy. And he got another guy who's overseas right now. Like, his name escapes me. Korkmaz. And I think he just stood pat and he didn't make any stupid trades. And he drafted really well, seemingly, so far. So it's only been one. I can't really speak to it. But you could probably speak more about how your GM has picked really bad picks. Talk about some of the ones that have really washed out.
Yeah, so the fans that don't follow Chicago that closely, I mean, you can obviously point to the most important one of them all is Marquise Teague from Kentucky, that Kentucky team that ended up all five starters got drafted in that NBA draft. That was 2012, I think. Yeah, after they won the national title, he was the only one to bust out. I mean, he did virtually nothing. He sat on the bench for the first year, played occasionally, showed that he really couldn't play. And the funniest thing about that draft pick, and most people know this by now, but Tom Thibodeau wanted to draft Draymond Green, but insisted that the front office insisted that Marcus Teague needed to be picked. They needed another point guard to back up Derrick Rose in case anything further happened. So they picked him instead. And the funniest part of that whole story is it goes that Derrick Rose went to watch Marcus Teague play at Kentucky in the NCAA or a couple games before in conference play. And I guess he went and watched two or three games, came back and told the front office, do not draft this guy. He can't ball in the NBA and he's going to be a flunk out. Basically, Derrick Rose scouted him and told him, you know, don't draft him. And they drafted him anyway. So, I mean, take Derrick Rose's advice for what it is.
Right.
But the guy actually knows hoops outside of anything else. I don't really know, but he knows hoops. And if he told you not to draft the guy and he's a point guard, too, why would you draft the guy? And then look at what Draymond Green is. Draymond Green now.
Right.
Other guys to consider are Tony Snell. No longer on the team. Doug McDermott, no longer on the team. Bobby Portis, they traded up for McDermott too, by the way. Gary Harris was taken, and so was Jurkic, I think.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I'd have to go back and look at the thing, obviously, but
yeah.
I have the memory of a wet noodle, so this is hard for me.
We could extend it all the way back. I mean, this talk of draft picks, I mean, they drafted LaMarcus Aldridge and immediately flipped him for Tyrus Thomas. And look how well that happened. Look how well that worked for the Bulls. They've had some nice quality bench guys that they've drafted, quality guys that have come on and been productive for the Bulls, but no superstars, no guys you can build your franchise around outside of Jimmy Butler.
Right.
If Derrick Rose's knees would have held up, that would have been a different story. And I think that's something that this front office can attest to too, is they put a lot of their chips in the basket with Derrick Rose. And for that not to work out, I think is ultimately going to be one of the biggest downfalls. And it's, as much as I don't like Gar Packs, I think that's something that eventually it'll hurt them, and it still hurts them, and it's not really their fault.
You know, and that's a good point. Like, they're not that far removed from a team that everyone thought was going to challenge for the title in the East. When Derrick Rose went down in 2012 against the Sixers in the playoffs, everyone thought they were going to be right there in the Eastern Conference Finals. So they kind of went all in, you know? I think where they fumbled the ball.
Oh, yeah, you guys remember that game. You just played this. The first Derrick Rose injury was against the 76ers. And I have flashes of Andre Iguodala just throwing dunks down from nearly the free throw line against a Bulls team that was down like 20 or 30 at that time.
And Noah got injured.
That was a horrible series.
Yeah, Noah got injured too.
Yeah.
And that was the first time the Sixers made it out of the first round in many, many years. So I was really.
And they were making sure that Luol Deng didn't die on the court. I mean,
yeah.
The dude was playing with the blood disorder and the leg injury, and and then they're like, "No, get him out there." And
I mean, they had
three guys that they would.
Yeah, and they had a really bad run of luck there. I think the issue that they've run into, the reason that they maybe should get more flack than they're getting, is because they haven't handled the recovery well. They've done nothing to show you that, like, oh, we can do this again. We can build another team. They have Jimmy Butler, and he was a diamond in the rough. But aside from that, you're right. They've picked, and when they even picked Doug McDermott, who has some potential, they just traded him for nothing. Traded him for, like, a point guard who probably won't be anything in the NBA. And then I understand they let Taj Gibson go because he was going to be a free agent and he wasn't going to come back anyways. That one makes sense to me. But if you're going to do that, I mean, just scrap it. Just trade Jimmy Butler. Let him go to a contender. Get whatever you can. You know, start over and show that you, like, have some competence and some direction. And I think every move they've made for the last couple of years, it just shows that they have no direction. They're just, like, listless and floating in the abyss. Does that sum it up?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret here about the Bulls, is that they've pretty much decided that the course that they're on right now is going to be the one that they're going to stand pat with. And the owner that is to be now, Jerry Reinsdorf's son, Michael Reinsdorf, pretty much has taken over all the operations for the Bulls, and Jerry just oversees it. I don't know if you knew this, but Jerry Reinsdorf also owns the Chicago White Sox, too, and invested heavily in baseball. loves his baseball team. He talks all the time about his baseball team and how much he loves it. And to be honest with you, I think he would trade his World Series. He wouldn't trade his World Series for the six rings that he got in the NBA, building the Michael Jordan dynasty. And people could call me crazy for it, but the guy loves baseball. But that brings me to another interesting point, and you maybe can attest to this a little bit. But outside of what the Bulls have done, in the 90s, they haven't had all that much success in it. Yeah, it's been unfair that LeBron's been in the Eastern Conference for the better part of 10, 12, 13 years. I mean, not being able to get out of that, plus Derrick Rose injuries, just kind of mediocre sitting there, and the Bulls really haven't contended for anything since then. And I think Bulls fans are really fed up with it, and 76ers fans probably could have attested to that. Post Allen Iverson era, kind of no direction really, and that's how the Bulls fans feel right now. And the saddest part of it all is the cash cow is still bringing in money, and it's still sold seats, even though people have started not to show up. Even the game tonight against Denver, they weren't showing up. The United Center was half full. So people are getting angry and frustrated. It's just not going to translate to anything until there is an actual financial squeeze on this team, which will never happen because of, well, 23.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Well, it's like I was talking to you earlier about how after Iverson was gone and, like, you know, the team just won. I mean, we had Iguodala. I loved Iguodala, but fans got really sour on Iguodala because he was paid like a max player who wasn't capable of running, you know, being the number one guy on your offense. No discredit to Iguodala. He's still one of my favorite players. He is an amazing basketball player that didn't really get his credit. But he's not your number one scoring option. And the team tried to put some crappy players around him and tried to, you know, it was the same thing. They just tried to make it to the playoffs and make their money. And, you know, it drove people away. And I feel like that's happening with the Bulls fans right now. I feel bad for you guys. Like, I'm actually, as a Sixers fan, on the opposite side of that. Like, I get to watch the team be horrible and grow from the ground up, which is amazingly fun. You guys are on the other end of that, where you had a really good, you had great potential, and it just kind of fell out from underneath you, and now you're middling. So let me ask you the next question. Is there any hope for the future with this franchise?
I would say at this point, my perspective on it is Bulls fans should just I hate to say this, but for Jimmy Butler's sake, you should embrace it for him at least. The guy deserves to be embraced by the fans. And just because the front office is making moves that aren't the smartest for the franchise in the future and aren't necessarily going to push them closer to a championship, you should still support Jimmy Butler in a way. And it's hard for me to tell people to still embrace the team because being the sixth and seventh or eighth seed in the playoffs and getting an 18 to 22 draft pick every year it wears out on people, and getting second tier free agent wears out on people, because let's be honest, the Bulls aren't drawing any big name free agents anymore. And with the new CBA, it's going to be a lot tougher for guys who are drafted and are successful with their teams to leave teams to go somewhere else, because they can get paid the most money with the other team. I wanted to fill you in on a little other snippet of information on Cameron Payne too, while we're here.
Do it.
Bulls blogger, they posted a tweet today, and it said, "Welp found the smoking gun as to why the Bulls like Cameron Payne so much." So a little bit of background is Gar Foreman, close ties to Iowa State. That's why Fred Hoiberg is now the coach of the Bulls. A big Iowa State connection there. Gar Foreman was a assistant coach, worked front office at Iowa State. Fred Hoiberg was obviously the coach there, so strong ties for them. So Cameron Payne, I guess, had an assistant coach, and this guy by the name of William Small. His Wikipedia page reads, "An American basketball coach who is currently an assistant coach for the Iowa State Cyclones." He worked in several jobs, and his assistant coach job was under former Iowa State head coach Tim Floyd at UTEP. And if you know anything about Tim Floyd, Tim Floyd has strong connections to the Bulls, to Gar Foreman, to Iowa State. So the last little bit of information on Cameron Payne is William Small is credited with being the lead recruiter for Murray State on Cameron Payne, who was also a first-round draft pick. So bingo. They found out the reason why the Bulls were so high on Cameron Payne, because all these other guys that were surrounded by the Bulls and the Bulls' little cronies are just chirping about Cameron Payne and how successful he was because they recruited him in college. So the plot thickens. It gets deeper and deeper every day, and you figure out new things about this team that honestly shouldn't surprise any Bulls fan or any NBA fan. And it just I pray that the Bulls somehow make the playoffs and then they get bounced out of the first round and we move on from all of this, and maybe D-Wade opts out and we can talk about some type of future. I don't know what it's going to be, but some type of future. But what about your front office? How about the level of hate? Where's it going? And how do you see it? How do you see the future for the 76ers maybe in the next 3-4 years?
I'll say this. I'm really not confident in Brian Colangelo's ability to negotiate a good trade on the behalf of the organization. I've lost complete confidence in him. His drafting was fine. This trade of Nerlens Noel, because his back was against the wall and because of his own stupid ego, has just thrown, I think, everybody in Philadelphia for a loop. Nerlens Noel is a beloved figure by the fans. I know there was, you know, quote unquote issues about his attitude, which I never saw. And like, he did come out and blast the team this summer. And he was really upset about his lack of playing time because there was too many centers on the court. But he, for the most part, was a really, from anything you heard from the guys on the team, they're like, he's a good guy. He's an upstanding character. He's a leader on the team, and the things he brings to the table, his steals, just to start, the quickness of his hands is unlike any 7 foot player. He's not quite 7 foot, but any 7 foot player I've ever seen in the league. He's so fast. Did you see that?
Close
first,
enough.
Did you? Yeah, exactly. Did you see the first game highlights from when he was on Dallas? That he finished the game with a strip, a steal, and dunked the ball. Like, he just ran the court like a gazelle and he dunked the hell out of that ball. He is amazing. If I had to choose between Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor, I'm choosing Nerlens Noel every time, and 6 times on Sunday. I don't know if that's how the expression goes, but I've just made one up. And here's the thing. If Joel Embiid doesn't stay healthy, and I am really deeply concerned at this point because he's had a slew of injuries since he's come into the league. Like, his feet seem to be okay now, but now it's his knee. Before that, it was his back. And he's a 7'2" guy who, he's very athletic, but he's just also, he's a 7'2" guy. Like, 7'2" people don't tend to stay together all that well. And I'm a little bit worried. And if I had to pick, I know things were, people were saying, well, Nerlens Noel didn't want to be a backup. He wants to be a starting center. And I, deservedly, he's that good. His offense isn't there. And you can't pay. I mean, they were worried they were going to have to pay him as a starting center because his contract's up this summer. So I get that part of it. But if I had to pick a guy to back up Joel Embiid, it was going to be Nerlens Noel. He's your safety blanket, not Jahlil. Jahlil can't do those kinds of things. He's a liability defensively. And while he could stand to get better over the course of his career, he's not right for this system. So my confidence has been shattered with all of the great or seemingly good picks are not screwing up that Brian Colangelo has done so far. He made one gigantic mistake in trading Nerlens Noel. And then, by the way, he even traded away Ersan Ilyasova, which was a great trade. He got 2 second-round picks for him, and it was wonderful. Like, we didn't need him on the team. Dario Saric really needed those minutes. He needed to develop. He did a great job trading him away. So up until that point, he did everything that I thought he should do, that every fan in Philadelphia, every smart person in Philadelphia thought that he should do. And then he went and did this and lost my confidence completely. And I attribute it only to his freaking ego, because him and his giant collars and his tailored suits and his freaking ego, man. I'm like, I have no faith in him. Go on. How about you? What about your front office? I mean, we've just talked a little bit about it, but they can't inspire that much confidence, right?
Well, I want to touch on the Nerlens Noel thing real quick. To be honest with you, not talking about either one of our teams, but that Dallas team, I don't know. I know it's early, and I know I shouldn't hold a lot of, you know, hope right now for a lot of guys that are really uncertain. But my boy Yogi Ferrell, mm-hmm. at the point guard for Dallas now, getting the reins there with Harrison Barnes and now Nerlens Noel, I think they're starting to figure out to start build something pretty quickly. I mean, I think more quickly than they thought even. And to unload that Bogut you know, unload the Bogut contract onto the 76ers was big.
Let me stop you right there. There's another thing that nobody talks about, the Bogut contract. Listen, here's another thing that really kills me about this Brian Colangelo thing. I just want to bring this up. They got Andrew Bogut and they had to release him. People were vying for Andrew Bogut because he can give you a couple minutes off the bench in the playoffs. They could have gotten something for Bogut's contract, but Brian Colangelo put himself in a position where he couldn't do anything with it. The deadline was over. He couldn't hold on to him. It was either hold him or release him. If he had made that trade 2 weeks sooner, even, he would have put himself in the position to get something for Andrew Bogut. But what did he do? He got a second round pick this year and a second round pick in 2020. And they put it together as if they got a first round pick. As if they got a first round pick for Nerlens Noel. It's top 18 protected. There's no way in hell that's a first round pick. That's 2 seconds. There's Dallas, even if they win out the rest of the season, they're not finishing with, you know, what would they have to finish? If it's top 18 protected, they'd have to finish 19th in the league, right? They're not finishing that high.
Right.
They're not. It's just not. It's an impossibility. So he traded him for 2 second round picks and Justin Anderson.
What was the buyout for Andrew Bogut?
I don't even know yet. I haven't had time to look today. I just got home from work not that long ago. So
I want to say it's probably more than they probably should have paid for that. But that's another interesting thing is another player that I was thinking about is Rondo. And I like the Bulls are talking about point guards. The Bulls have 5 point guards on their team and they need to find a way to cut one of them. And I think they've been talking about doing that. Rondo makes the most sense for me. I mean, why, if you want to see what the young players can do, like they said, after they made this trade for Cameron Payne, if you want to see what the young guys can do out there, then why is Rajon Rondo still coming off the bench and playing 30, 35 minutes a game? When you've got 4 point guards, four of them being younger than 25, why do you still have Rondo out there, you know, playing minutes? So to me, I don't understand why the Bulls just don't buy him out for $3 million and let him go and the ties that they had. And an interesting topic that somebody brought up on the podcast on Saturday, Matt Peck of Sports Mockery, he said that he feels like Rondo would be the perfect fit with the 76ers.
Oh.
Now hear me out on this.
No, I'm closing my ears. Go.
if you put Rondo on that team, and you know anything about his background, about what he did here in Chicago as of recently with the Instagram post and kind of having the back of the young guys, you know, teaching him the way and, you know, sticking up for these young guys. He felt like the 76ers could benefit from a guy like this, kind of someone who sticks up for the younger guys and, you know, shows them the way. But then there's also that other edge to it where he starts mouthing off. He starts doing things you don't want your young guys to learn. So it's an interesting balance. So what would you say to maybe a Rondo deal to the 76ers if you were to be cut? This is just hypothetical.
I'll
never going to happen.
I'll say this. If I could slap you through the internet right now, I would. How dare you? How dare you,
I'm
sir,
just relaying
for ever
words.
Introducing it.
And it was an interesting conversation to have, but now I know. Now I clearly understand how the 76ers fans feel about that.
Do you want my
I don't
take
blame
on
you.
Rajon?
I don't want him on the team either.
Yeah. Do you want my take on Rajon?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. First of all, he's a dirtbag. And listen, I'm a firm believer in people can change. I'm a firm believer in, like, there's good in everyone and you can find your inner butterfly. But right now, the dude's a dirtbag. You know the things he said about the only open gay official in the NBA, like, got into his head and said crap to him. Like, he's a dirtbag. He said other really questionable things. I'm sorry. I am not a Rondo fan. The other thing is, let me ask you that. I'll put it to you like this. If the Bulls would cut Rajon Rondo and buy him out for $3 million, do you think he has a place in the NBA next year? Or do you think he's overseas?
Man, that's tough. I think he's got a job in the NBA somewhere if he takes almost nothing as far as money wise. He just wants to play. I think there's no way anybody pays him nearly the money that he got with the Bulls, and he would get paid next year if he optioned in. I don't know. I can't even think of a contending team that would want to risk their locker room, their chemistry, everything that they've built to bring in a guy that maybe could help you off the bench, maybe toss a couple nice passes. He's not going to score for you, but
he'll never be happy coming off the bench.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah, he'll never be happy off the bench.
I would say if he takes less than $3 million a year next year to play somewhere, I think he lands somewhere on the NBA, whether it's a really trash roster that just needs to fill out the roster, or it's a contending team where he's going to play, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes a night at most. Otherwise, you're right, he's going to be overseas playing, which I think he'd be fine with. I mean, you make a ton of money over in China or over in Europe, and you see some of those other guys who've done that, and they're having success. What's his name? Greg Oden had like some ridiculous game a couple months ago where he had like 41 rebounds or something crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
And yeah, it was ridiculous. He had like 92 points and like 40 something rebounds.
And he just came out and said he's done. He's retiring. Well, yeah, Rondo could do that. He could run.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's done with basketball. Apparently. I don't think his knees can hold up. Anyway, that's a different topic, but I mean, yeah, you just answered your own question. Nobody wants Rondo on their team. He's too much of a liability. He's a way less gifted version of Boogie Cousins. Boogie's a locker room cancer, apparently. But man, that boy can ball out. Holy crap.
And if you saw him on the parade today, all over Snapchat, he was so happy too. And I just thought about a thousand ways he was thinking in his head, like, man, it's good to be in New Orleans.
Yeah. I should call him a man. He's a grown-ass man. I don't know why I'd call him. Yeah, whatever.
He's got that. I don't know what's up with the Kings roster and like why the Kings continue to bring in guys that are just like locker room cancers, and then they flip flop and say that they want to bring guys in that have integrity. But you look at the guys that are still on their roster or were on their roster, like Matt Barnes, and guys that have had questionable character issues. Matt Barnes parallels what the Bulls have done.
Fair. Matt Barnes is kind of like the ultimate team guy. He's like the pit bull in the locker. He got his guys' backs at all times. Like, you know, he's one of those famously, you love to have him on your team. You hate him when he's on the other team. Like, you absolutely hate him. I think he was a good influence. But yeah, I see what you're saying. The Bulls definitely have. I keep going back to this. I had this preseason, you know, the preseason predictions, right? At the beginning of the season, I didn't see that there was any way this roster was going to work. And this is the second time I'm bringing this up. And my prediction was that Jimmy Butler was going to fight Rondo on the court at some point this season. And we were that close.
That's ridiculous. It was literally that close. And what Wade and Butler did with the whole, you know, coming out and calling out the team and throwing them everybody under the bus, that was pretty lame.
Yeah.
And then Rondo sided with the young guys, and it created a whole mess that Fred Hoiberg didn't ask for, but Gar Foreman and John Paxson found a way to create. And if I'm Fred Hoiberg, I'm sitting there like, you guys didn't assemble this roster the way that I know how to coach and what I was sold on, what you sold your fans on. This is not what we talked about when we were going to assemble and I was going to stay here for 5 years. And if I was Fred Hoiberg, I'd be pissed. I'd be genuinely mad at the Bulls for the roster that they've given him and the draft picks that they've taken and now gotten rid of. His only real asset that he has is Butler, and if he loses that, he could potentially lose his job. Gar Foreman loves him, but at a certain tipping point, something's got to change. What are you going to fire all 12? 13 guys that are on your roster, or are you going to fire the head coach? You're going to fire the head coach.
Right. Do you think I think he's on the hot seat anyway, don't you?
I think so, but they said already on Chicago radio this past week after the deadline, especially Gar Foreman, he went on ESPN 1000 and talked and said that, you know, their jobs are safe and that Fred Hoiberg's job is safe, that's their coach and that's the guy that they're sticking with. So it's for them, it's basically them telling Bulls fans, suck it up. This is what you're getting. And if you don't like it, then I don't really care.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And yeah, you're right. For the coach, he must be like, they put him in such a bad position. It's not even the roster they hired him to coach. They didn't hire him to coach this. And isn't his like a spread offense sort of deal. I never watched him in college.
It's a run and gun type of offense where you're running up and down the floor, and he consistently wants his guys shooting. I mean, he wants his best players shooting, you know, having the ball in his hands 15, 20, 25 times in the first half. He wants guys constantly shooting, moving up and down the floor. He doesn't need these slow motion guys that are going to play isolation. That's not really the way he did it in college, and he saw success by running and going to outscore you, outshoot you. He might not play the best defense, which is completely opposite of what Tom Thibodeau did. But he said, we're going to shoot the lights out and hopefully make you go away. And that's something that obviously the Bulls did the exact opposite by getting the worst 3-point shooters to join their roster and assemble.
It's almost like the lights went out and they're just still shooting.
They're still shooting, and exactly. And they'd probably hit more threes than they have all season. All right, final take for you. Looking ahead to the NBA draft, and I like to get everybody's opinion on this. If you had to pick your top three guys right now for the draft, who are you taking? Obviously, a lot of people, most people I've talked to, have taken Fultz. But there's been some other interesting conversations. I don't know how much you watch college basketball, but there's been guys that have been named on the several boards. And, you know, especially with college basketball going on in February and being a slow month in sports, this is a time where we really dive into it.
So this is going to be a quick conversation because I don't watch college basketball. I watch March Madness as much as I can, and that's really when I start getting introduced to the player. So to be honest with you, I've heard Fultz, and I've heard Malik Monk, and I've heard, I can't remember a couple other names, but I have no idea. So you tell me, who would you take? Well, first of all, where are the Bulls going to land with their pick? What do you think they're going to get?
I don't know. I've been seeing for the Bulls anywhere between 17 and 21, 20, if they can sneak up all the way to the fifth spot, which is not impossible. They're sitting in the sixth spot right now in the East, which is the saddest thing ever. but they're only three games out of the fifth seed, and they could even climb as high as the four seed if there's happens to be some kind of strut, some kind of fall. The Bulls could go as high as a five seed, which is pathetic for the season that they're having, I'm crossing my fingers that somehow the Kings stay relevant enough to where the Bulls can get that pick outside the top 10, because I don't know if you know that we've been waiting on this Kings pick for about 6 years now. The Luol Deng trade that went to Cleveland, we're getting the Kings pick in return, and this is the last year we can get a first round pick for it. Otherwise, it turns into a second round. So outside the top 10, I'm hoping that the Bulls somehow pull off two draft picks. But right now, NBADraft.net, which is a pretty good site to go look at. There's a couple other ones. Roto World does a really good one too. A lot of different picks, and they have the Bulls taking Harry Giles from Duke, which he was the number one overall prospect going into college basketball a year ago, going to Duke. He hasn't played all that well, but he's 6'10", 240. And then at number 17, so that's if they got the Kings pick. And at number 17, they got Miles Bridges from Michigan State, which I love. Watching a lot of Big Ten basketball, I think that guy's phenomenal. And Michigan State's been having kind of a roller coaster type season, and not one that normally Tom Izzo has at Michigan State. But Miles Bridges was another top five guy in his recruiting class. Solid small forward in the league. He's going to be kind of one of those tweeners, those guys that could play power forward, possibly not. Depends on his size when he gets into the league, how big he actually gets. But two pieces that the Bulls actually could really use is a small forward that can shoot and drive to the basket, and a guy that can rebound the damn ball.
Yeah. I would love to get in on this conversation with you if I could.
I'll tell you what they got the 76ers taking. They've got the 76ers if they're getting, supposedly they're getting the sixth round or the number six overall pick. Dennis Smith is from NC State. He's been one of the best players in the league, and they're talking about Dennis Smith being possibly the best guy out of this draft. So point guard, somebody that you could build around. He's had a really nice year with NC State, and he'd be a guy that I would love. I don't think I see him slipping to number six, but somebody that you guys can keep your eyes on, maybe at least for a little while. But yeah, like you said, I heard Malik Monk's name a lot for the 76ers, and he's been an interesting one in Kentucky to watch too. He can shoot. Man, that guy can shoot.
I don't know.
He's got long legs, long arms. His wingspan is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if you know about tankathon.com. It's great. I'm looking at it right now. So they have Sixers at number five right now, and they have them taking Malik Monk at number five. Markelle Fultz going number one to Boston with the Nets pick. I'm just reading off the list for you here. Lonzo Ball going to the Suns. If this is how the lottery pans out, Josh Jackson. I don't know anything about Josh Jackson, really. I've heard nice things from the few podcasts that I listen to, but I'm not really tuned in to college basketball yet. But listen, I do know about the Bulls pick. If the Kings pick, if they get it outside the top 10, you know what happens to that pick if it's better than the Sixers? If the Kings somehow luck out and get the number one
overall
pick.
They swap the picks, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I love Sam Hinkie.
The 76ers now just continue to being loaded in. Like you said, it was actually fun to watch them tank. All right. Well, my last take is if OG Anunoby too, another guy that could possibly be an early second rounder. And I know the 76ers got a second round pick, and people talked about him as high as the number 15, a top 15 draft pick. He's a guy to keep an eye on. He just had knee surgery for Indiana, but is a phenomenal player. And if he comes out in this draft, he could be an early second round pick. So that might be somebody that the Sixers might be interested in too. Listen, so that's a name to keep out for. But
I have no interest in any more injured players. Please, God, no.
You and me both. I mean, yes, look at us. Derrick Rose with the knees. Denzel Valentine with the knee injuries. Paul Zipser's been out for forever, and which a guy that a lot of people that Garpax is very high on is Paul Zipser. They think he's the next Dirk Nowitzki. Interesting that both teams kind of parallel, but it seems like the 76ers are more on the incline, and they're going to be on the incline for the future, whereas the Bulls kind of just hang. They're just hanging here with the 76ers, and it's not going to be for long before 76ers are at the top of the conference and contending for a really long time with the pieces that they built around. But I think that pretty much covers everything. I mean, This was supposed to be more of a hateful podcast, but we kind of turned it into more of the underlying issues and the bottom line for both of our teams. But where can my listeners, where can we listen to you at? If you write, where can we see all of your content across all platforms?
All right. I don't write because nobody wants to read that crap. But you can follow the Superflight podcast you can follow on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, all that stuff. You can also follow at ABPN, the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, where both of our podcasts are located. And you can follow the show on Twitter at Superflight Pod. You can follow me personally at Joe Borelli. And tell my listeners real quick, since we're doing a crossover here, where can we follow you? One more time.
Well, you can listen to my podcast at, like you said, almightyballer.com, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, iTunes, pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts, you can find us. Our last couple podcasts, we've had some really good guests on. One from Sports Mockery talked a lot about the Bulls. I did a deadline podcast. If you want to hear some of the things, some of the issues that we've kind of discussed in this podcast, I went into more of an angry, in-depth, fiery take with that podcast because I was coming off this trade and I was so fired up that the Bulls had given away so much for so little. But you can follow me on Twitter too, at Jordan C. Malley. You can read my articles. I've been published in Medium, Fox Sports, Bleacher Reports. I do a lot of college basketball writing, a lot of Big Ten basketball writing. So if you're looking forward to March Madness, give me a follow on Twitter. I'll be having a lot of coverage of that over there. Otherwise, listen to our podcast. And thanks for doing this crossover. This crossover is a lot of fun, and we need to start doing this more with other teams. Get a few more teams maybe in the mix and really, you know, kind of get a lot of different ideas. It's fun to see where teams are when you're not specifically in that city, and it's nice to touch base with other fans and other hosts to see like kind of where we all sit, and I think gives you your fans a little bit more of an in-depth discussion, maybe like even an in-depth look at some of these other teams. And we feel your pain here in Chicago, to be honest with you. We feel your pain, the pain that you've gone through for the last few years, but yours is looking up, ours not so much.
Well, I feel your pain too, but neener, neener, neener. Anyway, thanks, man. It's been fun. I'm super happy to have you on and to be on your show. So we'll have to do this again soon. It was a lot of fun.
All right, for Jordan Malley, the Debatables Podcast, thank you so much for listening. Our sponsors today were GlassesUSA.com and Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports, the leading producer in authentic sports memorabilia. We are out. Deuces.
Paul Zipser. Paul Zipser. It's Paul Zipser.